whether thou art a ghost that hath come from the earth, or a phantom of night that hath no hollow heart, or one that lieth dead in the desert, or a ghost unburied, or a demon, or a ghoul. Whatever thou be, until thou art removed, thou shalt find here no water to drink. Thou shalt not stretch forth thy hand to our own. Into our house enter thou not. Through our fence break through thou not. We are protected, though we may be frightened. Our life you may not steal, though we may be scared to death.
Welcome to Scared to Death, Creeps, Peepers, Roberts, and Annabelles. I'm Dan.
Hello, Dan. I'm Lindsay Buffett.
Hey, Lindsay Buffett.
We're just talking about Jimmy Buffett. I'm his long-lost daughter. I have so much fortune coming to me.
So much fortune. Well, we don't really have, any announcements. I know you wanted to do a quick thank you, and then we're right into stories today.
Yeah. So for those of you who did buy your summer camp tickets, thank you so much. We're so excited. It's going really well. We still have a ways to go. And so today, when you're hearing this episode, you'll probably have just finished your taxes if you waited to the last minute. So if you have an income tax refund that you haven't earmarked for something, or you want to be irresponsible with what you do have it earmarked for, you could just come join us at camp instead.
Build some fun memories.
Yeah. Memories have no price.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in camp, we know it's a ways out, but just for a variety of reasons, tickets are on sale a year ahead of time. So you can go to badmagicproductions.com, get your tickets, and thanks for the positive response and keep it coming.
It's going to be so much fun.
We need to sell a little bit more to pay the bills there.
So how many fan-submitted stories are you going to be sharing with us today?
I have two.
You have two. I just have one, you have two.
Okay. Well, I have two. So that makes three.
Yeah.
And my first story is about a female ghost who haunts a local cemetery, but has only shown herself to two people.
Huh, okay.
So she's there, but
she's particular.
I guess so. So, and that story has two photos to follow, which is always a little bit fun. And then my second story is a tale from a person who seems to have some childhood ghosts that maybe thought were gone that have shown up again.
All right.
Spirits, ghosts, I don't know. I was feeling bad about always calling them ghosts. I'm like, I need some alternative names.
Specters, spirits.
Thanks. I was struggling last night working on the
entities.
Book. Thank you. I couldn't think of any of those words.
I just have one story today. It's a very big one, and I think a very good one. I think very immersive. It drew me in. I hope it draws you in and all the listeners as well. We'll be heading to a haunted strip club in West Virginia.
I was going to say, let me guess, because I already know what it's about.
Before we get there, I'll share a bit of lore from some other haunted strip clubs. Some interesting new locations to visit.
So there's multiple haunted strip clubs. Is this a genre?
Lots. It could be. Yeah.
Okay.
There's quite a few, as it turns out. So I feel like this could be story today, but we could definitely revisit this going forward because, I'll touch on the story, but actually Bourbon Street,
a lot of
those ones there, supposedly basically all of them have resident spirits.
You know what? That makes sense because I wasn't thinking the location is haunted and then the location gets turned into a strip club. I was thinking a haunted stripper, which could be a thing.
Could be. I'm sure is some of these places.
Well, you can explore that in Nightmare Fuel.
Okay. Once you have showcased this week's spoopy socks.
Spoopy sock. Look at it. I have the one-eyed, one-ear, beige eater. Not a purple people eater, but a beige purple.
Something. Beige, purple, what? Beige,
see?
Beige people eater?
There you go. It's harder. Right. It's harder to say than you think.
So conditioned to want to say purple.
I know.
Okay, now it's time to go someplace. I don't think we've visited a strip club before in Scared to Death.
I think that we did somewhere
did we?
In the South. Actually, the building is being demolished now. I got an email about it. Oh boy, way, way, way long time ago on your side.
Yeah,
and it was it's abandoned building now. But I'm pretty sure it was a strip club. We're gonna get an email. Somebody's gonna know.
Okay. Maybe it went through various incarnations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Dickies or Matt. It had a funny name.
Huh. Yeah, man, yeah. God, that does sound familiar.
Maybe Logan will tell us by the end.
Given strip clubs' histories with vice and unfortunately violence, there are a fair amount of haunted gentlemen's clubs. In addition to being a strip club, allegedly the Palomino Gentlemen's Club in North Las Vegas was also a mob hangout when it first opened in 1969. A lot of mob hangouts in Vegas. Today, the Palomino Club is the only all-new dance club in Clark County allowed to operate with a full liquor license.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And in addition to a lot of stiff drinks and a lot of naked ladies, if the walls could talk, they would talk about murderers and murders they've witnessed. The club's owner, Adam Gentile.
That's a great name for a strip club owner.
Adam Gentile, yeah. He inherited it from his father, attorney Dominic Gentile, who assumed ownership after he represented the previous Palomino owner, Luis Hidalgo Jr., in the investigation of the May 19th, 2005 shooting death of Timothy Hadland. Luis, his son, Luis Hidalgo III, and Hidalgo Jr.'s longtime girlfriend, Annabelle Espindola, were all charged and eventually found guilty as co-conspirators in the contract killing of Hadland, who had been telling competitors that Hidalgo Jr. was bribing cab drivers to divert customers going to other gentlemen's clubs to his club.
Not a bad idea.
Nah. Timothy Hadland's body was found in nearby Lake Mead, but an earlier murder occurred right in the club. In 2000, then-owner's son, Jack Perry, shot and killed employee Kenneth Rowan, whom he thought was trying to buy the club out from beneath him. He pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 14 years to life in prison. Rowan died in the club's office in his own son's arms.
Damn.
And who knows how many people were killed inside the Palomino during the club's mob glory days. Stories like these have contributed to reports that the club is haunted. For years, dancers have reported having strange nightmares of being chased throughout the club after shifts, nightmares in which they are pursued through the club's dimly lit corridors, lights flickering above them as strange dark figures reach for them, figures they worry are intent on killing them. Also, a dancer who went by the name of Jan reportedly died at the club. It's unclear when, but possibly about 20 years ago. And ever since, while locking up, bouncers will find that the stage lights will mysteriously flash back on. The sound system will boot back up and begin blasting music, and the stripper pole will start turning as though there's still one last act to perform for the night. And it's not just the Palomino Club that's haunted. Before it closed down in 2014, Liquid Assets in Plainfield, New Jersey. There's a lot of fun names if you dig into it. Claimed to have captured a ghostly figure moving across the parking lot on their security camera footage on multiple occasions in 2002. The ghostly visages, which look like specks of light dragging pale, wispy tails across the screen, are not birds or video glitches, and they can't be explained by the company that installed the equipment. Club workers also used to report that the ghosts would move around beer bottles, toss the bar's soda gun up into the air, and brush up against customers. Customers who were excited to feel a body rubbing against theirs until they realized there was nobody.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 2000s, club DJ Sergio Lopez, who sometimes slept in the lap dance room after hours,
sure,
said one night his slumber was disturbed by a strange whooshing sound. He said, "The two doors to the room swung open. I saw a flash of light out of the corner of my eye and then felt a pressure on my ear and ear and face and a strange looping sound." He decided to film his next rest there and captured mysterious lights swirling around the room. All that prompted club owner John Colasanti to hire a psychic, Jane Doherty, to visit the club. "I've been in the field for 20 years now, and this is, to me, without a doubt, a ghost," she said in her visit. "The way it's moving clearly shows it has consciousness." Doherty said she felt one of the spirits hanging out in the club's champagne room, peeping on people getting lap dances. Doherty thought that maybe the spirits could be the ghost of 1920s gangster, a man named Vincent Mad Dog Cole, and his pals from the Bronx underworld, Joe Bar Rags Iderola and Jerry Chin Iderola.
Oh, these are great names.
Both Colasante's deceased uncles. I love Joey Bar Rags.
I like the Chin.
And there are so many more. Nearly all the clubs on New Orleans' infamous Bourbon Street have reported some kind of haunting over the years, like Scores, where a bartender named Liam Deegan said that a dancer at the club who was known for her laid-back personality once came flying down a back staircase to the bar one night, panicked and out of breath. In an attempt to sneak past a VIP area for a smoke, she had taken a quasi-hidden, underused path out of her dressing room and passed a strange mirror along the way. And when she glanced into it, she said that what she caught looking back at her was not her reflection, but instead a giant orb of light. She said the orb started moving, then chased her down the stairs like some sort of enraged spirit. Today's story brings us to a former strip club called Pete's Playhouse in Barboursville, West Virginia.
I'm sorry.
Time now for the tale of what's in the basement. When I started working at Pete's Playhouse, the first thing I noticed was the giant portrait of the former owner. What's that? I blurted out as the club manager and owner, Pete, of course, hustled me through the entrance. "Who? What?" Pete barked, turning around. The portrait was giant, It took up one entire wall in the inner vestibule, and it was done in an old-fashioned style, done in a way you might see a Rockefeller or a Carnegie portrait hanging in a museum. In the dim light, I could make out just a few of his features in the dark, oily swirls. Silver-white hair, a serious frown, piercing blue eyes. Oh, you mean the painting? That's just the former owner. Don't know him personally. From how he spoke, I could tell that Pete didn't see it anymore. That was par for the course for strip clubs. After a while, you stopped noticing the weird decor, the flashing lights, anything used to class the place up a little. It became just another workplace. I wanted to ask more about it, but I could tell that Pete was in a hurry, and I didn't want to annoy him. I really needed this job. Ask any stripper, you don't have to call me a dancer. I always find that pretty cringy. And she'll tell you how she got involved in a couple of sentences, since it's usually the thing people want to know about us. Some are former gymnastics and dancing champs who decided to make a little money off their talents and then got hooked on making your own hours, walking out the door with a handful of cash the IRS would never know about, and having work be a nonstop party where you're one of the most sought after and talked about guests. Others are just regular girls who realize that they, in the words of one of my former coworkers, "We're going to get fucked either way, but with this job, I get paid more." If you have a family and it's a matter of working for minimum wage at a grocery store or gas station, or you can make $1,000 a night on a good night at a strip club, what would you choose? And of course, there are the sad stories, the ones most decent people think of when they think of strippers. Girls who got hooked on some drug or another, were pushed into the job by some sort of pimp, got into bad debt, or had to get out of town fast due to a vengeful ex and took whatever job they could. My story, thankfully, not nearly that depressing. I'd grown up just over the border in Virginia, in a tiny community that emptied out more and more by the decade, as people sought better opportunities elsewhere, and the older generation began to die of pretty much every cancer you could get. Not only from the coal mining, but also from the chemicals that seeped into the water and soil. I'd been a pretty normal kid. I had a great childhood, actually. I got good grades, had plenty of friends, and was even on the cheerleading squad. I got a scholarship to a liberal arts college, moved to New York, and started working for a magazine. But then, the recession hit. Every week, more and more people got laid off from the magazine, and soon, as a relatively new hire, it was my turn. As I sat in the bedroom of my cramped apartment, a two-bedroom which I shared with three roommates, I looked at my computer, at a list of job postings that I was overqualified for and couldn't make rent with, and wondered what I would do. And then, I got a call from my dad. Cancer. Pancreatic cancer, to be specific, stage 4. My dad had been my rock my entire life. When my mom left us when I was 12, it was my dad who stepped up, happy to do anything I needed, like drive me to cheerleading practice, buy me dresses for dances, and giving me a comprehensive education about how it was my right to punch any guy that crossed a boundary with me in the face. Moving home was a no-brainer, even if I knew it was I was in for a depressing time. I had to do it for my dad. He needed me, and I needed to be with him. 2 years later, my dad passed. He lived over a year longer than doctors expected him to. And now I found myself stuck in Virginia, with a huge gap on my resume and few jobs that would hire me. Except stripping. Some of the girls I'd known in high school had started doing it, and I'd see their posts online, flashing wads of cash, cute lingerie, 10-inch heels. And now that they were, I know now that they were editing out a lot of other worse experiences, but soon I felt like, at least for the company and sisterhood, it could be worthwhile. I'd been so lonely the last couple of months, and when I did see people, I could only recite facts about my dad's cancer and his medications. I sounded like a bummer even to me. Pretty soon, it felt like I was seeing the signs everywhere. Live girls. Exotic experiences. Turn off for the next exit. All faded, the colors washed out from years of rain. But also, most of them were hiring. And I needed money, and to have something fun in my life again. After asking a high school friend to show me some moves in her garage, I finally got the courage to schedule a couple of interviews. Luckily, I'd stayed fit. My dad had a couple of acres that always needed clearing or tending to, and my old life as a cheerleader came in handy. When I slowed down some of my old cheerleading moves, it was practically the same thing as stripping. And now I was here at Pete's Playhouse, and they were going to audition me. "I'm going level with you," Pete said to me as we made our way into the main room, a dark, low-ceiling room with a stage ringed by tables and chairs. "Ordinarily, I'd have you audition, and I'd see about giving you a call back if you made it, but we've run into a spot of trouble the last couple weeks, and we're not in a place to be much picky." "Oh?" I asked. I didn't know if this was a good thing or a bad thing. I didn't want to be hired just because there was nobody else, but also I pretty much had the job, guaranteed. Pete bobbed his head, the bald top of it reflecting the multicolored lights. Couple of girls have run off last couple months. Some of our best. Brought them up from being amateurs. His tone was getting heated, and I could tell he was forcing himself to be professional. Anyway, they decided they liked another opportunity better, I suppose. Usually girls make an effort to stay in touch, but fuck us, I guess, because I ain't heard hide nor hair from them last couple months. I nodded. I didn't love the way Pete was talking about these women, but what he was saying was par for the course, too. Girls decided to start over in new towns or get out of the work permanently, and they didn't want to carry their old lives with them. That afternoon, Pete gave me the rest of the tour, from the cramped dressing rooms backstage to the bar. We passed by the row of hot tubs in a separate area, hidden from each other by gauzy red curtains, and Pete told me about how some girls would take nudie dips with customers.
Ugh.
Not that it's required, he said quickly, but you know, if you ever need some extra cash. There's also a basement downstairs, he added, nodding to an industrial-looking door behind the bar. Use it to keep kegs in, whatnot, but it's furnished. Some of the girls who come in from out of town stay there some nights when it's too late to head home. You're welcome to it if you live... Where do you live again? Just over the border, in Parisburg, I told him. Then, at his look of surprise, added, but I have some friends I can stay with in the area. Good thing. That's a 2.5-hour drive. Pete gave me a skeptical look. Well, you're welcome to stay down there if you need it. I thanked him and then formally auditioned. It may sound awkward stripping down to your underwear and dancing for your prospective boss, but once I heard the opening notes of Tina Turner's Private Dancer, I felt all my awkwardness melt away. Until I was standing, shivering on stage, and the last notes of the song were long gone, and Pete was handing me my coat. Great job, he said gruffly, so there was no way to know if I'd actually done a great job or if he was just desperate. As I left that day with my new schedule, I thought I felt the painting's eyes on me, following me out to the parking lot, as the blacked-out doors closed with a whoosh. I'd done it. Over the next few weeks, I would get the lay of the club. Two other girls and I became fast friends, a redheaded girl who couldn't have been much older than 21, who went by the stage name of Lyric, and a girl who was around my age, 27, with box braids and cute dimples named Tatiana. That's Jeremy, Tatiana told me on one of the first nights, as Lyric danced on stage. We were behind the bar getting ourselves seltzers. It was just 5 p.m., still light outside, though in the club, it was perpetual night. We always thought he didn't like lap dances, because he'd never get one, not even on his birthday. Turns out, he's shy about his fake leg, like his actual leg is fake. I giggled and she went on. There's Andy. He's a vet, doesn't say much. Aunt Scott, the one with the baseball cap, he's rich, like Texas oil money rich. Shit, I said. I had no pretensions about actually dating one of these guys. Guys who thought they wanted to date strippers typically found out very quickly that they weren't cool with their girlfriends dancing for other guys. But Texas oil money rich made me start having thoughts. Too bad for you, though. He's not a big fan of blondes, Tatiana added teasingly, pinching a lock of my hair between her fingertips. There was this girl. She went by Patty Cake. I think her actual name was Sharon. She was always hanging off of him, begging him to buy a lap dance, but he never went for it. Huh. We didn't have a chance to say much more before it was time to hustle backstage, to spray ourselves with clouds and clouds of perfume, and to get out in front with the customers. Sometimes we did shots before our performances, even though it was technically frowned upon. It made it easier to get into the moment, and to ignore the persistent feeling of being watched. Now, obviously, we were being watched by whoever happened to be there. Jeremy, Andy, Oil Money Scott, or any number of semi-regulars who happened to come in. But their eyes were dull somehow. They seemed to slide over our bodies, taking in what they wanted before they got distracted by a move or needed to take a sip of their drink. They were enraptured, but not necessarily intelligent. It was like performing for a herd of cows. But there was something else. I noticed it on that first night when I got off stage and felt eyes following me back to the dressing room. I shut the door firmly behind me, which startled Lyric, who was getting ready. What's up, girl? Lyric asked, pinning a lock of hair to her head and spraying it with hairspray. You good? Yeah, someone's following me, though. I'd known it was best not to look behind me so nobody could try to chat me up. Give me that, you got a couple minutes to talk? BS? So I hadn't looked. Should I get a bouncer or... I'd tell him to fuck off, Lyric said. But when she opened the door, there was a long pause. Babe? There's nobody here. Maybe they went back to their seat? No, because look, there was a red rope, like a VIP rope, between the hallway and the stage. The strippers could and did step over it easily, but men typically had to move it out of the way or risk getting tangled up. More than one drunk guy had face-planted trying to get over it. I went over to the door and saw what she meant. Hadn't been moved at all from its usual spot. You'd have heard him messing with it if he'd pushed it out of the way, right? Lyric said. She shrugged and then smiled. Or maybe some kind of ninja has a crush on you. Ha ha, I said. It was hard to feel truly uneasy in the dressing rooms. There was so much glitter, so much perfume and makeup, so many long, stretchy articles of clothing that barely covered your crotch and or nipples, that it seemed like someplace completely insulated from the outside world. And there was the heavy door between us and the rest of the club. But later that night, as I was leaving, I saw that door. Not the dressing room door, but the one to the basement behind the bar. I saw it was cracked open. Nothing weird about that on the surface. I'd just never seen it open before. For some reason, though, this connection stuck in my mind. The weird sensation of being watched, the open basement door, except was it open? I'd been leaving after an 8-hour shift, sore from dancing, bruises on my knees, my eyes aching and from staring into the lights. Maybe I didn't know what I was seeing. But then it happened again. It was a slow afternoon and Tatiana and I were supposed to be on, but Tatiana had come down with a cold and called out. Luckily, we had only one customer, Scott, the guy who Tatiana had described as Texas oil money rich. I didn't like to put on all that fake stuff. Oh, you look so tense. Do you need a massage? Etc. So I was surprised when Scott called me over for a lap dance. I guess he'd made an exception to his anti-blonde rule since I was the only girl. Do you want to go to a private room? I asked him, my voice dipping low, sultry as I trailed my hand across his shoulder. He smiled and raised his eyebrows. Do you see anyone else in here? Touché. Even though I usually didn't find myself liking the men who I gave lap dances to, it's hard to like a guy who's staring directly at your boobs, as though they're pieces of meat he could buy at the deli. I started liking Scott. He had an open, trustworthy face and didn't stare too hard, but didn't act like he was trying to be too respectful either, which can also be weird. Like they feel bad about being there, and bad about what you do. Me starting to like Scott and feeling like he was a good guy made it so shocking when I felt his hand graze my ass. I jolted back. Scott noticed I'd stopped and tilted his head. You okay? What was I supposed to say? Everyone knows you aren't supposed to touch the stripper during a lap dance, but of course people did it anyway. Maybe Scott thought his oil money meant he was above the rules. If you're not into it, that's all right, Scott said. Said polite, actually, leaning away from me, and I quickly shook my head. No, I got distracted, sorry. I attempted to smile, blowing some hair out of my face in a way I hoped came off as sexy. Long day, you know. Maybe we both need to unwind a little. In the hot tub? It was a last-ditch effort to get him to spend a little more time here, since he was the only customer and girls usually got questioned if guys decided not to stick around after just one dance. I thought that Scott, who seemed to see through such empty talk, would turn me down and I'd be free, but to my surprise, he nodded. I'd like that, he said. You know, I've wanted to talk to you for a while now. Oh, yeah? We kept up the banter as I led him through the club to the hot tubs. I chose the one that looked like it had been cleaned most recently. Luckily, I'd seen Pete dump some chlorine in each of them to burn away any lingering germs, and I undressed while beside me Scott did the same. So tell me about yourself, he said as we settled in, and I don't know why, but I just started talking, not cute stripper stuff like how much I love dancing, but real shit about my old job and my dad. As I spoke, he ran his fingers over my kneecaps, down the backs of my legs, making me shiver. Fuck, man, cancer blows, Scott said. I had testicular cancer in 2009 and again in 2011. Lost a family jewel, but I'm in remission otherwise. But it fucks you up emotionally for a long time afterwards. You're never really the same. It's good in a way because you're grateful for every minute you get, but sometimes you wish you didn't have that awareness hanging over you. I nodded, then realized my face hurt. Then realized my face hurt from smiling. Was I getting a crush on Scott? The exact thing I wasn't supposed to do? Scott rubbed my thigh and I decided to turn things back to stripper territory. So, about those family jewels, I started, and Scott laughed. Everything works perfectly, if that's your question. Then we were laughing, and the bubbles were streaming up over my back, and I was shivering, a little in excited chatter, when something under the water sneaked around my chest and tweaked my nipple hard. Ow! Scott sat up, his eyebrows for what? Are you okay? He looked around at the lights, the hot tubs leaking on the floor. There aren't any loose wires around her, are there? Are you seriously going to play dumb? My face was on fire. I was more embarrassed with myself than angry at him. I'd let him touch me and cuddle me in the hot tub, touch me outside, and now I was upset that he was getting rough? You were touching my legs, my thighs, and decided what? It was time to go for it, I guess? Is that some little fantasy of yours, to pinch girls, pretend you didn't do it? I seriously have no idea what you're talking about, Scott said. I haven't touched you at all. Look. He held out his arm, and I saw that we were still an arm's distance away. He couldn't have touched me if he wanted to. I have to go, I mumbled, getting up and out of the hot tub. Water sloughed off my body and splashed on the floor, and I almost slipped as I walked away, not even bothering with my clothes. Scott called after me, his voice growing panicky, though, I thought bitterly. He was probably only worried about getting kicked out of his favorite strip club, not actually how I felt when he touched me. But then I remembered that he hadn't, and every inch of my skin and my body prickled with goosebumps. That's when I saw it. crossing the club. The door to the basement, just a little open. Bam! Door burst open and Pete came out, not wearing his usual uniform, a button-down shirt and jeans, but a t-shirt and ratty cargo pants, all smeared with what looked like dirt. He caught a glimpse of me and frowned. "Hey, we're not licensed to do full nude in the stage area," he barked. "I get that it's a slow day, but figure out another way to get customers." I ran away back towards the dressing room. I didn't know what else to do. I was ashamed, humiliated, angry that Pete had talked to me that way, and above all, frightened. I had no idea that Pete was even there that day. From my memory of the schedule, he wasn't supposed to be. Pete came in on Mondays, then Wednesday through Saturday, sometimes a little bit on Sunday, but never on Tuesdays. He said he had to go see his kids in Roanoke, but it was a Tuesday. What the fuck was happening? Back in the dressing room, I threw my shit into a bag and hightailed it out of there. I was supposed to be on for the whole evening, but I decided I had enough. Something was going on, and I didn't want to stick around to find out what. I tried to distract myself at home, watching trash TV and sitting in my dad's armchair with a big mug of tea like I'd done as a kid, but I still felt on edge. The house felt too big, the rooms too spacious. For the first time, I felt my dad's absence, not as an emotional loss, but as a physical presence. Something that followed me from room to room. Ring! Ring! I jumped, but it was only the house phone, probably spam. I picked it up anyway, ready to crash it back down, but heard heavy, scared breathing. Hey, don't hang up. It's Lyric. She sounded panicked, her voice caught in her throat, her breath coming through erratically. I got your phone number from the office. Lyric paused, and I could tell there was something she wasn't telling me. I don't know how to say this, but yes, you can stay here, I said. I was familiar with this element of strip clubs, too. Girls who got in fights with their boyfriends needed someplace to crash for a couple days. Honestly, I could have used the company. No, Lyric said. It's not about me. It's Tatianta. She texted the group chat saying that she had a cold, remember? The way she couldn't come to work today? Yeah. But I went to her house today, Lyric continued. And her sister said she left for work today and hadn't come home. Assumed she spent the night at my house and... Lyric choked up and a jolt of panic ran through me. I opened Tatiana's locker here just out of curiosity. Her phone is here. What? It's fucking here in my hand. Lyric was almost sobbing. She didn't send that text. I know she didn't. I don't remember exactly what happened next. I got so angry, so mad that some people don't think, what, strippers are human beings? That they think they can fuck us over? There are no consequences? I got in my car and drove as fast as I could and didn't let up on the gas until I was outside Pete's playhouse. A 2.5-hour drive had taken me less than 2 hours at the speed I was going. I'd expected the playhouse to be in its full Tuesday night swing, shitty drink specials and a couple customers, the bartender behind the bar playing Candy Crush on his phone. But when I got there, it looked abandoned. Not even the neon lights outside were on. Now I felt sick to my stomach thinking about how I just told Lyric to stay there and I was coming to help. I walked across the parking lot, feeling the wind against my face, pulling my clothes back as though to push me back to the car, and I tried the front door. It opened easily. As always, the first thing I saw was the painting. The former owner. I still didn't know what his name was. Over time, I'd come to think of it as a funny quirk, as though the club was thinking of itself as a prestigious institution like a college or country club. But now I stopped in my tracks. Something about it seemed malevolent. Like it was truly looking right at me, like he was looking at me. I felt my whole body freeze before I remembered what I was here for, Tatiana and Lyric. Pushing open the second door, I expected to hear music, maybe. Maybe they'd just forgotten to turn the outside lights on, or at least the sound of people getting ready, but there was nothing. Dead silence. The lights weren't even on. A low-grade humming echoed as I turned the lights on, and then inexplicably, even though I was feet away from the DJ setup, the music started. The opening lyrics of Tina Turner's Private Dancer. I'm your private dancer, dancer for money, do what you want me to do. As I continued to listen, still frozen by the lights, the music seemed to warp and dip, as though it were playing on a slowed-down record, not from an electronic file.
I'm a private dancer.
Shut up! I yelled, not knowing who I was yelling at. Shut up! Turn it off! But it just got louder, louder, more distorted, until it stopped altogether. In the sudden, heart-pounding silence, I heard only one thing. The slow creak of the basement door. Fuck, I whispered. And now I swore I could hear something, like quick, light sobbing from below. Tatiana, I whispered. Lyric? No answer. I felt like I had no choice but to go down and look. While the rest of the club was outfitted like a house, normal walls, carpeted floors, wood paneling, the staircase was industrial, something you'd find at a factory. A bare bulb illuminated the cinder block walls, and I found myself holding my breath. as though whatever were down here was going to force itself down my throat and into my body. As I turned the corner, I swore I heard something scuttling just past me into the wide, expansive darkness ahead. Where were the lights? As soon as I had that thought, all the lights flipped on. Not the industrial ceiling lighting I'd expect, or expected, but club lights, strings of blinking Christmas lights, beaded lamps, a spotlight coming down from the ceiling. Holy shit. I was in a club. It was almost exactly like the club upstairs, but older. 1940s looking velvet couches and small wooden cafe tables surrounded a stage flanked by dusty curtains, a leg lamp, kind of like the kind from a Christmas story, but a little too realistic. Old-timey paintings on the walls and the floor. I stepped over the threshold and gasped. It was packed dirt. This was no finished basement. Pete had lied to me. Why? Why would he tell me to spend the night down? Bam! From upstairs, I heard the door down to the basement slam and then slow footsteps. Thud. 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 Hello? I called out. Lyric? Tatiana? But the figure at the bottom of the stairs now wasn't one I recognized. For a moment, it seemed to loom too tall, inhumanly tall, before I caught sight of its familiar face. Pete? I said, relieved to see someone I knew before I remembered how I'd seen him walking around the club covered in mud, barking at me. I stood stock still as Pete moved forward, haltingly, his shoulders stooped. As he stepped into the light of the club, I saw his eyes skittering around as though he was seeing something that I couldn't. It was then that the odor hit me, a deep, pervasive stench of death, not from Pete, but wafting in from the doorway with him alongside him like a new physical presence. Pete? I said again, slower, trying to get him to get out of whatever trance he was in. The smell clogged the back of my throat and I tried not to gag. Pete, listen to me. But he wasn't paying attention, just stumbling forward to the stage, and then he said something that chilled me to the bone. Dad? For some reason, it all clicked. The painting of the former owner in the front, the low lighting, so I couldn't make out any of his features, not really, but those familiar ice blue eyes, the same ones skittering around the room now. It was Pete's dad. Dad, I'm here. You don't have to be angry, I'm here. Pete turned to me, his unfocused eyes trying to meet mine. He just wants a little company, that's all. That's all he ever wanted. As I watched, frozen with horror, a distorted shape blocked out the spotlight on the curtain. Long, too long. And that's when I noticed that the room was pulsing somehow, like a low bass beat emanating from the walls. And I wondered how long this thing had been down here. How long it had been waiting for me, or someone else, or each one of those missing girls. Now the lights were flickering on and off, fast as strobe lights. And in the center of the room, the flickering spotlight. I saw it. An old man, long since buried, levitating about a foot off the ground, his face gaunt, no, not gaunt, decomposing, his head hanging low over his chest, a tattered suit hanging off his body, his bloodless hands lipping his sides, and then the head snapped up and looked directly at me. All of a sudden, the room plunged into darkness and heard a crash from one of the tables. Pete? But I was already running as fast as I could to the other side of the club, back to the industrial staircase. As I did, I swore I felt a darkness spreading across the floor, almost at my feet, chasing me, racing against me. Pete's screams echoing downstairs and the sound of something like human skin being ripped apart. Then I heard the pounding on the staircase door, and for a moment I wondered if this was some kind of trick, if something even worse waited for me on the other side. But I didn't have a choice. I had to open it. Hey! To my relief, the face staring back at me was very human and very familiar. Scott. He'd apparently gotten to the club with flowers for me and an apology he didn't even need to make, and noticed something was wrong. He'd brought Tatiana, whom he'd found downstairs seemingly drugged and Lyric back to the police station before coming back to investigate. That's when he took me to the police station. It went down as a kidnapping. Apparently they figured that Pete had been kidnapping girls for some time, and then presumably murdering some of them. But we knew that wasn't the case. There was something down in that basement that Pete had been feeding. Maybe he'd never wanted to let his dad go, and we assumed it had gotten too strong, wanted to come out and live on its own, wanted to consume on its own. All of us had mysterious scratches and bite marks on our bodies that none of us could explain. Even Tatiana and Lyric said that Pete hadn't touched them. But that didn't matter to the police when it looked like a clear suicide on Pete's part. I still don't know how they attributed Pete being torn nearly in half to suicide, but I guess not many people care about finding justice for a murderer strip club owner. And I guess it's true that traumatic events bond people together, because I'm still in touch with Tatiana and Lyric. Both of them have moved on since. Tatiana moved out to LA, apparently making good money working at some high-end clubs there. Lyric and her boyfriend are now fitness influencers, but she doesn't go by Lyric anymore. I won't share her real name. She doesn't want to be connected to that part of her past any longer. And Scott and I got married last year. Mm-hmm. It's true that his family jewels are fully functional. We have a baby on the way due next fall. We've talked about what would happen if either one of us were to die, how we'd explain it to the baby once they're older. And both of us agree, we'll tell them about each other, how amazing the other parent was, how much they love their child, and we'll tell them to mourn us, to grieve us, but also, let us go. Neither one of us want to come back like whatever was going on between Pete and his father.
Yeah.
Creepy. I mean, yeah, it's a...
Do you want me to keep you in a basement? Is that what this was about?
No.
So, is that why you chose this story?
I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty intense, pretty out there story, but like, man.
I mean, out there, but also like, I think, I mean, well, at this point, you've covered so many cults on TimeSuck. It's like, they do sometimes try and like keep...
Oh, yeah.
They don't keep the leaders alive, but they like try to like preserve the bodies. Uh-huh. And, like, I don't know. I mean, death is so final and that final act of, you know, burying someone. So... I mean,
yeah, yep. I mean, some people have kept like spouses or parents in their for years.
We had a story on Scared to Death. Was it like maybe a Mexico?
Yep, the daughter, the bridal shop.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there have been in Russia. There's a weird example of this like guy grave robbing, he was grave robbing, and he was like bringing dead girls, you know, like their bodies back to his place and kind of turning them into dolls in a sense and keeping them for years.
Did you tell that story here?
I think so.
It feels familiar.
Yeah.
Man, so creepy.
Creepy.
You did a really good job of the record turning down.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that was impressive. Good vocal work.
Okay, good. Trying to, you know what, actually it is kind of fun with like, I've just been doing this for so long and I don't know, as you get a little older, maybe you get less embarrassed. Maybe some people get more, I don't know. But anyway, like with the Nightmare Fuel, it's a different recording process and I try to like differentiate the voices more.
Sure.
And then I'm like hoping to add that to these a little bit too. It's harder because, you know, full transparency with the Nightmare Fuel, it's like, it's multiple takes. You know, I'll stop if I make a flub. Because it's not a conversation. Because I really want to get, you know, like, you know, it's like a, like an audiobook almost more. And we don't have that here. That would be weird to chop this up. I like that it's organic. So I get a little more nervous here because I'm like, well, if I mess this up, I just mess this up.
Right. Well, and also it's the difference of like telling a story on camera and not telling a story on camera.
True.
It's like there's, when you're doing Nightmare Fuel, no one is watching.
Yeah, it is a different feel.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, like just me being here.
And exactly, that's what I was going to say. And there's not someone right here, you know? Yeah, because I don't want to like, that's why we wouldn't want to do multiple takes here. I mean, I would think 99% of the shows we've ever recorded on Scared to Death, one take.
There's only one show that we did twice.
Oh, yeah, only one, because it was a tech mess up. But we just leave the flubs in, which I like.
Yeah.
And especially with horror, it's like, well, you can't do like this way over and over again.
Yeah.
That would be so weird for you if I'm like, hey, act scared now.
Okay, do it.
This
ready?
Is the fifth time you've heard this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm glad that, because I was a little nervous going into the, like slowing it down.
No, it was
like,
really good.
This could be corny and ruin the story.
No, it was great.
Okay, good. Thanks. I couldn't find any pictures directly related to this story that I found, you know, interesting. It's like, you know, like those little orbs of light. They don't come across well in a still photo.
No, they don't. It always just looks like, you can just dismiss it in a variety of ways.
Yeah, it's like sometimes they'll have the shape and there are, you know, photos associated with some of these stories, but I'm like, they don't translate. But the Palomino Club in Las Vegas, I mentioned, they have this haunted Halloween theme. They've done it in the past. And so I thought this was kind of funny. And there's several clubs that'll do this. So that's Jason Voorhees on the stripper stage.
Welcome to the stage, Jason.
And they'll just like mix it in with girls dressed kind of like, you know, and I mean, they're still like nude stripping, but they have like Halloween costume type stuff
on. Okay, that's kind of fun.
This next one is, this is the same club, Pinhead from the Hellraiser franchise. He had some stuff on stage and the fog machines and everything.
I mean, that would be like...
It'd be a fun theme. I can see that in like New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought this was funny. In Portland, Oregon, Guilty Pleasures Gentlemen's Club, they help kind of like, you know, co-produce this haunted house, just like Scarywood here locally.
Sure.
But it'll feature new dancers. And they did it in an arcade this past year. So it was like,
oh my God, please.
Video game theme, but also like, you know.
Please invite us.
I know. It would be like funny. So
I'm like, actually, wait, this was just last year?
I think it was just last year. And
we should go this year.
It would be fun, I mean, to do one of these, because it's like instead of like the people coming out and grabbing you just like a random like teen at a park, it's adults only, and it'll be some like, you know, some
they're
dancer.
They're not allowed to touch you.
I think for this, they might be, or get close.
Yeah, well, it's a liability if they touch you.
Oh, so in the scary places,
Well, just anywhere, so probably.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the reason why, like, if you're receiving a lap dance, you're not supposed to touch the stripper.
Right.
There's all sorts of rules.
Yeah.
But okay, but this just looks kind of silly and fun.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised. Like Portland, actually, I remember hearing years ago, it has the most clubs per capita.
Seems right.
But they're like very atypical. Uh-huh. Like it'll be like literally like a vegan cafe. I mean, I went to a bar there once and it was technically a strip club, but it was just one pole in the corner and then just like a hole in the wall kind of hipster bar.
Yeah.
And they just had a tiny little stage, no DJ, and just maybe one dancer.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Portland also has? It has the only sports bar. It's actually called the Sports Bra. The sports bar in America that only play women's sports. It's this woman
sunk
her entire life savings into it.
Wow.
And she, it's like, that's all. And like, as we all know, like women's sports is becoming so much more popular because women are amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's Portland, cool. Strippers, and I love it, the sports bra. Mm-hmm. Like, that is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, Portland's, that's a great name. Portland's has a lot of cool, like little niche businesses. And actually this is, that little poster reminded me, Arcade Bar, one time in Portland, I went to like the coolest, it was such a big arcade bar.
Yeah.
So many cool games.
Oh.
But then also the Blue Shell here in town.
Yeah.
We finally went to it and it's a really fun little vibe.
It's really, really fun. Mm-hmm. Like it feels
very
really,
welcoming.
Yes. I was just going to say, it feels very safe.
Yes.
Like if you drink, if you don't drink, it doesn't, you know, some bars you walk in and you just feel like you immediately have to order a drink.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel douchey.
Nope. Not an aggro vibe at all.
My only complaint, two complaints. It was stiflingly hot.
Oh, yeah.
And it smelled too much like cigarettes.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Oh, man. Darcy and I, as soon as we walked in, we were like, whoo. But also, it's next door to a smoked meats restaurant.
That probably was
and so
it.
It's like, yeah. I think it's like a combo of like cigarette smoke and...
Huh. I didn't notice anybody smoking. I don't think you can smoke in
you
that
You can't
bar.
Smoke in there, but they were smoking outside.
Ah.
And just like wafts and, in.
Yeah, wafts in.
Yeah.
And it's very
but
cool.
So cute.
Yeah, here in Coeur d'Alene, it's like on Sherman. And if you anybody listening, you know, I know we got listeners in the area. If you want to go, what I like about it is, you know, you walk in the front. They have little bar food, chicken tenders and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And fries and things. But you walk in the front. It's a small little like one section. The front section, couple arcade games. I mean, not a couple.
Not
like
a couple. There was like
10.
Like six. One, two, there were four or five pinball machines
on
one side.
Four or five pinball machines.
Then there was like a driving game. There was a shooting game.
Yeah, Terminator. Yeah, there was Gauntlet.
There was Mortal Kombat.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe like six.
Yeah, maybe like a dozen of games. Yeah.
And then you walk to the back. And it's just this area where they have these bigger tables where you don't have to even like buy their drinks. You can just reserve these tables, bring your own snacks even, and just play D&D, Magic the Gathering.
There was the cutest group of kids, but they were probably like 25. Mm-hmm. Back there playing, they were doing a D&D and they had their Domino's pizza boxes. And,
yeah,
like,
it was so cute.
Sometimes they were taking breaks to like pop up to the bar and get drinks. But like by drinks, I mean like a vitamin water.
Yeah.
But then like this person was getting a cocktail. I mean, they really, it is just, it's really nice to see places for adults. You have to be 21 to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you still get like the adult vibe without like A, being forced into alcohol and like B, because it's like when, oh, like let's meet up with our friends. Okay, what do you guys want to do? You want to go to dinner and drinks? It's like, I am so sick of dinner and drinks.
I'm so
sick of it.
Yep.
I'm always the one who's like, can we go bowling?
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like a meat market. It's just a nice different kind of option.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're in the area, Spokane, Wallace, wherever, super cute. And they were packed.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, the whole time we were there, they were really busy.
Okay, so I'm excited to hear your stories.
Yes. Do you have something else you want to say?
I do have something. Are you ready? Are you ready to be done with this one?
Sure.
Okay. I'm ready to hear them, but first we need to take our mid-show sponsor break. If you don't want to hear these ads, sign up on Patreon to get ad-free episodes and more. What is the most basic gift you have ever given the moms in your life for Mother's Day? Flowers? A candle? Some random knickknack you picked up at the last minute because you completely spaced Mother's Day?
I have definitely made the mistake of procrastinating gifts for Mother's Day. And then, like the Friday before, I run to whatever store is open and convince myself that yes, my mom does need another coffee mug that declares she's the world's best. So lame.
This year, how about one upping yourself by giving the moms in your life an Aura picture frame? Named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter, Aura frames are guaranteed to bring joy to any mom at any age. Aura frames connect easily to Wi-Fi and have unlimited storage so you can share as many pictures as you want.
This year, as many of you know, I am on a spending freeze, but one of my carve-outs was meaningful gifts for the people I love. I don't want to give all of the moms in our lives something that won't bring them joy. We are giving Aura frames to the moms in our world because they are timeless, heartwarming gifts.
Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off, plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's A-U-R-A frames.com. Use code SCARED at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks for listening to our sponsors, Creeps and Peepers. And now Lindsay will entertain us with some fan-submitted horror.
Hopefully.
Let's go.
Okay. Where's your Layla?
Right here.
Did your Layla like your weird matcha latte?
I know. I didn't sleep great last night, so I'm powering up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I tasted it. And Dan gets a green tea matcha latte with 2 scoops of lavender powder in it sometimes. And I was like, what does it taste like? And he said, it tastes how the bottom of a bowl of Lucky Charms, no, Fruit Loops smells. And I did smell it, and then I tasted it, and that is accurate.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I've been doing teas or chai lattes or matcha lattes, and they get pretty, they're kind of boring, which I like. Like, I'm just trying to like drink less caffeine.
Yeah.
But so there's not a lot of variety, but the little lavender powder gives it a little variety.
Switching it up.
Yeah, switching it up.
All right, settle in, buddy boy. All you have to do is listen now. You can be as tired as you want.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I'm good. I'm feeling pretty good, actually.
No, I know. It's easier to like listen though, because now the hard part's over.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can just enjoy. Hey, Dan and Lindsay. Longtime listener, first time caller. I've recently made it through all of your episodes, and it struck me that I believe I have a story with something you may not have covered yet. The ghost story is not mine, but a recent friend of mine's. There's a bit of setup, so you know my relationship to this location, but I'll try to be brief while still trying to tell the story correctly. I grew up in a rural area in Illinois and still live in that area to this day. My family struggled financially, and if we're being honest, we just plain struggled. There was a lot of tension in our home. My parents fought constantly and fiercely. And being rural and of little means, there was no way of escaping the conflict. It's not like I could take a walk into town to go window shopping or see my friends. And even when gas prices were far more reasonable than they are now, we just didn't have the extra money to go for a drive all willy-nilly-like. Cell phones weren't all that common yet, and even if they had been, well, out of the budget. My siblings and I didn't really mind anything but the arguments, and we all had our own ways of spending a lot of time outside to avoid them. I read a lot, and I loved to read outside. I had medical reasons for trouble sleeping at night, but when I got a good book in my hands, it made things a little bit easier, and it made me a little bit drowsy. And during the day, out under a tree in the warm sun, sometimes it would even lull me to sleep. There were only 2 locations within walking distance of my house, the tiny local cemetery and the county dump. The dump was much further away and much less appealing than the semi-well-maintained but also semi-forgotten little cemetery out in the middle of beautiful nowhere. Do you see where I'm going with this? Yes, I had much the same sort of relationship with my tiny local cemetery as Dan did with his. Creepers unite. I would walk the much shorter distance to this quiet, peaceful, lovely, little, sunny cemetery where my own family for generations was also buried. And I would take a book. I could read there for hours before needing to walk back and began doing this regularly as a teenager, with permission from my mother, of course. It was my little sanctuary, and I never felt uncomfortable there. Fast forward 20 years. I'm talking with what I'm hoping could be a new potential friend at an event of some sort that slips my mind. We're talking about our favorite books and stories and how we fell in love with reading and folklore. I tell her about my favorite place to read as a teenager was a local cemetery close to the house I grew up in. And she tells me a ghost story. She says, my cemetery is haunted. And she has seen her. Okay, now I'm intrigued. I love a ghost story. I mean, I love most stories, but I really love a ghost story. You cannot sit there and tell me I was reading in a haunted cemetery 4 years and not finish the tale. It's time to dish, sis. How have I never heard about the ghost in the cemetery I probably know better than most? She had my attention. So she tells me that, like others in the area, she used to ride the back roads late at night with her boyfriend as a teen and do teenage stuff with her friends. You know, the things you do in a rural area when you're young and bored. Drink. Make out, do a little bit more than make out. Driving the back roads around here at night is pretty common with teenagers and pretty much always has been. So yes, this night, maybe she'd had a few drinks. Maybe her boyfriend had 2. Maybe they'd been having a couple puffs of the devil's lettuce. But she swears that one night, riding shotgun with a beer while her boyfriend booze cruised slow and steady around 2 a.m. in the morning with the windows down, enjoying the summer air, they noticed a faint glow moving and coming from the otherwise unlit and pitch black cemetery just off the road as their car approached. her boyfriend, who may or may not have brought this on himself, turned off the headlights to see the glow a little better and brought the car to a crawl and an eventual stop on the side of the road as the glow continued to move across the very back of the cemetery ever so slowly. But wait, was it moving towards them now? She insists it was not a flashlight. There was no beam. It was a steady glow, faint, but definitely there and definitely moving. Remember, she didn't have a cell phone and neither did her boyfriend, so this wasn't cell phone glow. They weren't common. What on earth was it? Her boyfriend said something about getting out of the car and taking a closer look, but she stopped him when a shadow began to form just behind the still moving glow, a shadow with long hair and wearing a long, dark dress. The shadow walked through the grave, making her way slowly towards the car, head down, hair swept across her face by a light wind, and with this glow in front of her. Was she following it? Was it part of her? My friend couldn't tell and did not want to be able to, and honestly, she was more worried about the dwindling distance between the glowing figure and the car. She became incredibly uneasy and told her boyfriend she wanted to leave. Just start driving again, probably a little louder than she may have been before because of the beer, but she wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. What she was sure of was that the figure had caught her attention. The woman snapped her head up. Long hair swept across her incredibly pale face. Her eyes looked dark and hollow, her lips black, her dress appeared faded and worn, and she opened her mouth in a terrifying scream, and suddenly the glow was gone. My friend screamed too, at her boyfriend to fucking drive. She could feel the presence of the entity, but she had disappeared into the darkness. He didn't need much convincing. She said he told her later that he was relieved that he hadn't actually pulled into the cemetery and had stayed on the side of the road because the headlights would have shone on the figure, and he did not need to see any more details than what he had already seen. This encounter was the most terrifying of her life. She tried to ask around if anyone else had ever seen this figure, this dark woman in the cemetery, but she never had any luck, and she never heard any stories explaining this woman's presence or found another witness, and she never, ever drove past that location ever again. Mm-hmm. She was too terrified of seeing whatever it was she had seen again. I will tell you both, I was shook. I had never heard this story either, and honestly, I was relieved no one else had ever had a similar experience. I'm not sure I even believe in the ghosts whose stories I love so much, but she believed she was telling the truth. You could tell. And I 100% believed her. And I told her as much. But I also told her, I'm not scared of that cemetery, not even at 2 a.m. on a summer night. I'm way more scared of people than I am of spirits, which is why I screamed at her 20 or so years ago. She scared me. It's the only thing within walking distance, and I was in pain at night quite a bit. My medical issues causing my joints to become stiff and sore as I tried to lie through the night in bed. Walking did make things loosen up, and I always had a book with me. In fact, if I took off walking to ease things up, I would read while I walked. I loved reading so much. You could see me walking to the cemetery regularly, looking down at my book while I read. And on a few occasions, sometimes before I even bothered to try and get some rest, desperate for relief and filled with teenage bravado and perceived immortality, I would make my way to the old standby with a book and a book light, just enough light for me to read comfortably in the dark. The very last night I ever did this in my life, I was finishing up my chapter and beginning to make my way back to the road that led to my house when I heard a car idling with its lights off between me and the road. Red flags everywhere. Girl, you are so stupid for being out here right now. You're going to get murdered. That's it. You're done. I kept an eye on it once I noticed it and tried to move behind some taller stones for safety reasons, but it remained there. It's a tiny cemetery, and I knew I couldn't avoid whomever it was forever if they were inclined to not be avoided. I began to panic, not knowing what to do or how to make my escape. Cars had driven by while I was there before, of course, but no one had ever stopped. It's a freaking cemetery at night. Pot, meat, kettle. I tried to move through a small patch of trees and bushes that marked the boundaries of the cemetery to avoid the car altogether and try to sneak past it to go home, but I did have to get a little bit closer in order to get myself in those trees. I was all nerves and hadn't heard a soul in the car, and it was too dark and I was too far to see. Everything was so quiet other than the engine idling. Suddenly, this woman's voice just loudly breaks the silence. I couldn't even understand what she had actually said, but it wasn't important. I went straight into fight or flight. And guess what? I'm flight. Startled and spooked out of my mind by this definitely a serial killer's car, it's gotta be, I screamed as loud as I have ever screamed in my life and took off, dropping the book and breaking my book light in the process. The woman in the car began screaming too, through an open window, yelling, "Drive!" I hid until the car was out of sight and my soul returned to my body. And then I quickly made my short distance back to my house and to my bed. And I never did something so stupid ever again and remained in my yard if I needed to get up and move in the middle of the night. While I'm not necessarily excited about my friend's description of her entity, it does make sense. I was the goth kid in high school. I always wore raggedy black dresses. You know what's easy to thrift when you're on a budget? Raggedy black clothing. And luckily, that was the goth style where I was at. My hair was long, yes, but come on, I'm not that pale. I mean, I'm definitely very pale, and I guess when I was sick, I would have been more pale, but I'm not terrifying, for Christ's sake. My eyes and lips, yes, those were black. Makeup, goth kid. I was looking down initially because, well, I was reading and walking, and yes, my book light inside of my book was the glow, and of course, I was relieved she couldn't find more stories of this encounter, because if this had happened again, I would have been the ghost who pissed herself. As it stands, she's told this story to dozens of friends and family members, and I'm still known as the ghost of Cottonwood Cemetery. I wish she was still in touch with her old boyfriend so he could hear the ending that his ghost story is just me. But as it is, I am highly entertained by the fact that I am the ghost that haunted this woman for the last 20 years. And now our kids play together. Life is crazy, huh?
Huh?
Love the show. Thanks for reading this. I hope you found it as entertaining as I have. And never forget, be the cryptid you want to see in the world. Sincerely, the ghost of Cottonwood Cemetery.
And they don't give their name, right?
No.
No, and they don't say where Cottonwood, because I'm like, is this Cottonwood, Idaho?
No. At the beginning, they say Illinois.
Oh, shoot. Okay, I missed that.
Yeah, and I'm assuming female, just like the way it was written, dresses.
Yeah.
Some indicators. And I do have two photos to share with you, and then we can chat about it.
I love this. Yes. This is a great story.
Yes, okay, so my first picture is of the Cottonwood Cemetery sign established in 1853. And mostly I wanted you to see that because I thought that you would think Cottonwood, Idaho.
Yeah.
But not that. And then my second photo is just of the tombstones. And I just think that this is so funny because it's like, think about this at night.
Yeah, at night.
And then she was like hiding behind them and like dodging. Like, can you just imagine? Like, oh, God, this is such a great story. I laughed so hard the first time I read this.
That's awesome.
I hope I didn't read it too fast because it was like killing me.
I mean, I remember hiding in the cemetery at night, like in, you know, sneaking out, and there just wasn't many places to go.
Right.
And sometimes we go up in the cemetery, and I'm like, if somebody would have seen us.
Who are you making out with in the cemetery?
Nobody.
Good.
It was just good. Yeah. I wasn't doing anything in high school. Me and some dipshit buddies just being idiots.
That's what I like. Yeah. That's my favorite.
Yeah, that's really funny that she ran into that person years later.
Like, what are the odds?
And heard that story. I was like, wait a minute.
Isn't it so great?
I'm the ghost. Yeah, and I like at the beginning they said that, you know, we haven't had a story like this on Scared to Death, and we haven't. Like, that was essentially like the ghost sent in the story.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastically constructed. I was even thinking about it when I was putting this together last night because I thought like, how would I tell this story to keep people engaged and to not give it away? And so I felt that she did an excellent job of like setting up like her relationship to this place and why she would go there and like, you know, her love of reading and the comfort that she felt there and then stops talking about herself to relay her new friend's story. And I also love the detail of like being at an event and hoping that this is a new friend, because making adult friends is one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
It is. So, so, so incredibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, like, so of course, like, you're at this thing and then, like, someone's like, oh, we both love reading. Oh, do you like horror stories? You know, it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just this random person to you, and who's now one of your dearest friends, but, like, is like, oh, my God, let me tell you this ghost story. To make that connection is so fantastic.
I love that. And she wasn't feeling good. And then just the way she dressed, that was a great like breakdown to like,
yes.
I can picture all that. And it did make me think about like, you know, in a lot of, and there's other reasons for this, like you can get into like anthropological reasons, but like, you know, a lot of old women, like the hag.
Oh yeah.
From like, you know, medieval Europe and like olden times. And it just made me flash in my mind of like, you know, like the way that we have spirits walk and in horror movies, the way that things, and the sounds they make.
Yeah.
And now I'm just wondering how many times in like history out in like Europe, some poor old lady, she's 80 years old.
She's creaky. And
yep. And she's living in an age where she's living in this, you know, drafty, oh my gosh, what do you call it when it's like a wet, cold, like in England and
damp
stuff. Damp, like this damp, cold, not good for her joints, all this. There's no medical care. There's no orthopedic surgeons back there.
She's not getting PRP in her hips.
Right, right. She has like black rags on and like hair. And she's just like trying to get home. Maybe she has dementia and she's lost.
Oh.
And she's outside. And then some like young kids are like walking out and they're like, eh. Like, oh my God, a witch.
Oh my God, it's a ghost.
Right. And this poor lady's like, I'm just old. Like, it isn't helping my self-esteem. That's really funny.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And so well written. Because it's a hard tale to pull off.
No, that was great.
Yeah.
So whoever you are, Anonymous, well done.
Well, she's the ghost of Cottonwood Cemetery.
The ghost of Cottonwood Cemetery can spin a yarn.
Oh, man. Ooh, nicely done. I also like...
is that the right phrase? Sorry, spin a yarn? I just pulled out of my ass.
Sure,
I think so.
I don't know. You said something in your first story that I was like, what was it? Like, neither hair nor hide?
Mm.
Like, I haven't heard hair nor hide from those. And I was
yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah.
Okay, country bumpkin.
Yeah.
I'm from the city. That was just one I hadn't heard. But I love the sign off. And never forget, be the cryptid.
Yeah.
You be the cryptid you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? You're really funny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a good one. Okay, now I have a more traditional scary story.
That was great.
It was great because you believe it. You believe that there was something there, and then
it's a fun twist.
Yeah, I liked it too. Dear Master of the Suck and Her Royal Majesty of the Suck, I grew up in a town just on the outskirts of Houston, and the house where we lived is the same house my parents still currently resided. Like most kids growing up, I had a lot of fun with my family. Watching movies, playing board games, etc. There was one difference between my siblings and myself. I had imaginary friends, or so I thought. One of my friends that I had was a little girl. Her and I would talk and play together all the time. I don't remember much of her, but I do remember us playing in my closet a lot. It got to a point where it was the only place I felt safe in our house. I would fall asleep in there, go in there to read, or just to talk to my friend. My family said there were multiple times where they would hear me talking to someone, and instead of hearing what sounded like me imitating or creating a new voice, they would hear another voice respond to whatever I was saying. They said that the voice would respond didn't ever sound like me or even like a voice I could make. Mm. Sometimes it was sweet, like a little girl, and sometimes it was deep, like a man. From then on, my family gave the spirit a name, La Niña, meaning the little girl. I can't tell you how many times my family and I would place things down in one spot and then find it in a completely different spot, or even how often we thought someone was calling our names. On occasion, we would see stuff fall down on its own or the TV channel changing with no explanation. We all knew that La Niña was doing it, but no one ever wanted to acknowledge it in a serious manner, especially my mom. She told me not to talk about what was happening because it would give more power to whatever this thing was. The other friend that I had was a dark shadow man and who wore a hat. I would wake up in the middle of the night and he would stand at the foot of my bed right outside the closet where La Niña and I constantly played. I would be a liar if I said he didn't scare me because he most definitely did. It was just a dark mass shaped like a man, but I couldn't help but feel he was threatened by me or wanted to harm me. Oftentimes, he would also appear downstairs in our living room late at night. If we were watching a movie in the dark, I could see his silhouette in the kitchen. Even in all the darkness, I could still see his figure as if he was a dark void that consumed the darkness around him. My siblings and I would occasionally fall asleep in the living room, and sometimes one of us would wake up and leave the other one downstairs. Whenever that would happen, whoever was left downstairs would run up the stairs crying because of how dark and scary it was. Well, everyone except for me. I wasn't even fazed that I was by myself in the dark. I remember sometimes waking up, seeing shadows in the dark, and then just walking straight up to my room as if there were nothing to be scared of. Fast forward to the present. I live in an apartment with my roommate and my dog. We decided we were going to go to an amusement park the next day just to relax and enjoy our time off away from work. We work in a medical lab that's performing COVID tests. The next morning, I got up to feed my dog and get ready for the day when I realized I needed a new Band-Aid for a cut I'd gotten the day prior. We keep stuff like that in my roommate's bathroom since it has more space. Before I went into her room, I would knock, and this time I knocked and said, "Can I come in?" And after that, I heard her say, "No, not right now." I didn't think much of it and figured I'd come back and grab it before we left. A few hours later, I texted my roommate to let her know what time we needed to leave, and her response left me in shock. She told me she'd be home by the time we had to leave. After reading her response, chills ran down my back, and I couldn't help but look at the door to her room and wonder, well, then who responded to me? Later that night, we were hanging out, and she asked, "Oh, hey, I forgot to ask you, who's the guy you had over the other day?" I laughed. "What guy? I didn't have any guys over." She laughed back at me. "The guy! I heard you guys talking in your room the other day." Now, I'm typically very sarcastic and I like to continue jokes, but I could tell she wasn't kidding. "No, seriously, I really didn't have a guy over. I think I was passed out whenever you're saying this happened." And the mood between us immediately went from just hanging out and laughing and having fun to serious, wondering what the other person was talking about. She insisted that she'd heard me talking to a man in my room, that there was a conversation happening. I didn't want to scare her, so I told her that it's possible she just heard my TV since I usually fell asleep with it on. We went to returning to our fun night of hanging out before she went to her room, leaving the bedroom door open while I sat in our recliner and watched TV. As I was watching TV, I heard a very soft and delicate voice coming from her room. It sounded like she was trying to talk to me or something. "Hey, were you just talking to me?" She walked to the door, looked at me. "No, I wasn't talking at all. Why? Did you hear something?" I told her no and not to worry, but I could tell that what I said really disturbed her. I know she was probably freaked out, but I'm trying my best to piece all of this together. My ghosts, spirits, demons, or whatever they are from my past seem to have followed me miles away from my home, and I don't know what they want. I haven't told my roommate about what happened that morning, and I don't know when I will. I'm hoping that these things of my past don't scare her away. Yours truly, Carolina.
Yee, Carolina.
Ba-ba-ba.
That is the worst when it follows you.
I mean, and it feels like the way this is told is like little kid, and then it seems like there was probably years of nothing, and now they're back.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are back.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first I just thought the dude was back.
Yeah.
But then that like, and I know exactly what she's talking about when like someone's in another room and you think you hear them. You're like, "Hey, did you say something?"
Mm-hmm.
I say that to you all the time because You talk to yourself a lot.
You talk to yourself a lot too.
Do I?
Yeah.
Do I?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think you talk to yourself more than I talk to myself.
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I think it's like a funny thing because you put
We both talk to the dogs.
We both talk to the dogs a lot.
A lot.
A lot.
So
there's a lot of dog talking. It's probably more that than anything.
Yeah. So when you hear it from a distance, like are they talking to themselves or are they talking to the dogs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom talks to herself a lot. So I've become weirdly self-conscious about it. So I try not to talk to myself like at all. I try to keep it all inside, unless I'm talking to the dogs.
She doesn't have like, what do they say? It's a problem when you're like answering your own, like she's not having a conversation. She's not like, well, what do you think I should do? I don't know what you do. Like, it's not that.
No, it's just, she doesn't know how to keep her thoughts inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a problem at her office as well.
Yeah.
Hasn't stopped her.
Uh-huh.
She's retired now. She's got to let it out.
But I was thinking, God, that would be crazy if... Okay, let's say you have like these entities attached to you and they're not necessarily terrifying you, but they're harassing people around you.
Oh man, but they're attached to you.
But they're attached to you and no matter where you go, it's like that would just mess up your social life so bad.
Yeah.
If like, and like it's just this constantly, like you have people around you be like, "Hey, this is so weird, but have you been hearing X?" And you're like, and you're trying to like, "No, huh?" But in your head you're like, "I can't get rid of it."
My God. And then like let's just say you've got like a group of friends and like you're living with friend A. And then that happens. And then friend A meets somebody and moves on. And now friend B is living with you. And then friend A and friend B are like, "Hey, would you hear all of this?" And then you're like, "Yeah." And so then like maybe everyone decides like it's the place. So then you and friend B move somewhere and it keeps happening. And then maybe friend B moves out and friend C moves in. It's a, eventually you become the
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you are fucked. Man. Unless you have a really cool friend who's like, "No, don't worry about it. No problem, Bob."
Right. Someone who like, doesn't mind being around that kind of thing.
Oh.
Yikes. Good stories. That was a good one too. Like,
And obviously an old one, like back to COVID, back to 2020, 2021.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good telling.
Oh, that first story cracked me up.
Mm-hmm. Just like, that is such a very specific twist, and we this far into the show,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, that's crazy. We haven't had one of those, but it has to be kind of a rare thing. That was just, yeah, that was just a timeless story.
Ah, yes. Do you want to do some shout outs or do you want me to go first?
I can start.
Okay, go for it.
I would like to thank the following Annabelles for supporting what we do here and keeping this going. It's been such a fun ride. Carissa Goodale. Goodale? Goodale, probably. I don't know where the emphasis is. Darla,
is it G-O-O-D-A-L-E, like Goodale?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Darla Sims.
I love that name, Darla.
I like the way this person wrote it. Goose, comma, silly. Silly Goose. Eric Nilsson. Courtney Newby. Tristan. Uju Grace Usoma. James Lancaster. Mr. Lancaster.
Sounds like a name from Clue.
What's Lancaster? Yeah. Oh, I'm thinking of Game of Thrones. Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, you're thinking that's Lannister.
I'm thinking of Lannister, not Lancaster. Yes.
There's Lancaster out in Hayden. So it is a road around here.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's supposedly haunted. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd like to also thank the following Annabelles for supporting us and making this little engine go. Katrina, Sarah Hughes, William Juarez, Aspen Larimore, S. Norton, Ruby Jen, Rye McEvers, and Lionheart 091. I like that.
Lionheart.
I like the numbers.
Yeah.
And then I have just a few spoopy shout outs this week.
Okay.
To Evan from your mom, Jess. Happy 13th birthday to my dearest creeper. I'm so proud of the smart, kind, and sometimes crazy human you're becoming. We better start your finishing school application.
Pinkies out.
Remember, pinkies up.
Yeah, pinkies up. Pinkies up and out.
Up. How? Wow, do you have a lot of pinky control? Up and out. I wish I could like, ooh, there we go. Up, out. Anyways, Evan, happy birthday. To Roxy from Roxy, happy birthday to my spooky self. And to Dan, not my Dan, but your Dan,
from
the best wife ever, Leslie. Happy birthday.
Oh, that's great.
I like Leslie. She's funny.
Mm-hmm. And that's our show. You can email us for spoopy shout outs.
Spoopy!
info@scaredtodeathpodcast.com, right? Isn't that where you like the spoopy shout outs to come in?
That's the only place.
info@scaredtodeathpodcast.com for spoopy shout outs.
If you try to send them to my stories, they won't take it because that's not where they go.
Oh, no. They won't forward them to you? That's crazy. you can send in your personal tales of terror to mystory@scaredtodeathpodcast.com. Thanks to Logan Keith for editing and publishing today's show, scoring it. Thank to Heather Rylander for organizing the My Story emails, and to book editor Drew Atana for polishing and preparing listener stories for the upcoming book number 5.
If you guys can even believe it, I have the entire rest of the season.
Just finished.
I just finished yesterday. It's been a long haul.
Yeah.
But all the stories until the last week of August. Done. Now they're getting edited for the book.
That's awesome. Thank you to producer Sophie Evans for finding the first story. The only story I told this week.
The one and only Sophie Evans.
We are on YouTube if you want to watch this show. We're on Facebook and Instagram where we post pics that accompany episodes and more at Scared of Death Podcast. We have a private Facebook group, Creeps and Peepers, full of fellow horror lovers.
And sometimes me.
And sometimes Lindsay Liu. Big thanks to the all-seeing eyes. Everyone smile me. Big thanks to the all-seeing eyes.
Do you go in there?
Sometimes I'll get tagged and I'll every once in a while, but I try to stay out. You know what I feel like when it's that group?
I know exactly what you're gonna say.
It's like the kids are playing in the room and then dad comes like, hey, you guys good in there? You guys good? Like I feel like I'm intruding.
Oh, yeah, I don't do that. I just like also if I get tagged in something, but like sometimes people post really like funny things or like cool things that they've seen or like movie suggestions. I don't ever like, you guys can complain in there. It is totally fine.
And that's
like,
why I don't want to.
If like, there's like a complaint about the show, I read it and like we consider it like, okay, is that something we need to work on?
Totally.
But like, I'm never going to jump in and be like, well, fuck you.
Yeah, get out of here.
No. You can join our Discord. I'm in there a lot.
No, is that the scared? No, wait. That's the Time Suck Discord,
there's
right?
Yeah, but there's a scared to death channel within Time Sucks.
It's okay. Excuse me. Great.
Mm-hmm. Super fun. There's a summer camp channel in there. Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. So much things.
So many things.
So many things.
All this technology. Okay, we have big thanks to the All Seen Eyes, Creeps and Peepers moderators for doing a fantastic job week after week.
Good job.
And just thanks for making our online community so fun in so many different places. Enjoy your nightmares, Creeps and Peepers. Hope you were scared to death.
Bye.
If spirits threaten me in this place, fight water by water and fire by fire. Banish their souls into nothingness and remove their powers until the last trace. Let these evil beings flee through time and space. Evil may pass through, but has no home here within. Scared to death.
Mad Magic Productions.
I'm just old. Like, this isn't helping my self-esteem.